On WML News at 7, good morning. I'm Maria Leaf. The D.C. Police Union is celebrating after a Superior Court judge ruled this week that the vaccine mandate for the force put into effect by Mayor Muriel Bowser during the pandemic was unlawful. Union Chair Greg Pemberton says once Bowser got rid of the weekly testing ability, it appeared they were looking for reasons to get rid of hundreds of officers who were unvaccinated.
There was a whole host of reasons why they would discipline people around these vaccination rules or vaccination policies. And luckily, the union worked very hard and the union's attorneys got involved, and we were able to protect most of those members from losing their jobs. But there was a lot of discipline that was handed out during that time. And luckily now, what the judge has ordered is that all of that has to be rescinded.
Pemberton speaking on WMAL's Vince Colonnais show. He says it remains to be seen what all of this will mean, though, for new recruits. The Federal Reserve Chairman delivering a drastic message, he says, about the reality of putting up a fight against inflation.
Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell essentially said the Fed's fight to get inflation down is going to lead to more hard times economically.
While higher interest rates, slower growth, and softer labor market conditions will bring down inflation, they will also bring some pain to households and businesses. These are the unfortunate costs of reducing inflation. But a failure to restore price stability would mean far greater pain.
This stark warning comes after four consecutive interest rate hikes and runaway inflation that's still at a 40-year high. The message also unwelcome news for investors who were hoping for a slowdown in interest rate increases later this year.
Fox's Christina Coleman. Following Powell's speech, the stock market took a dive yesterday, the Dow finishing the day down roughly 1,000 points. Arizona voters won't be able to decide this fall on ending Republican-backed election law changes.
Proposition 210, the Free and Fair Election Initiative, would have changed several Arizona election laws. It would have kept the legislature from overturning the results of presidential elections, expanded voting access, and mandated all voters could go to any polling site. But the state Supreme Court said the proposition won't be voted on in November. They backed a lower court's ruling that said the initiative was short by about 1,400 signatures needed to get on the ballot. Backers needed 238,000 signatures. Opponents to the measure were calling the proposition radical. Jill Nato, Fox News.
WMAL Traffic and Weather next. WMAL Traffic and Weather. Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Jeff Rackson, an activity on the inner loop of the Beltway at Pennsylvania Avenue. This in Forestville, affecting the right lane and the right shoulder. And on the inner loop at Route 1 in College Park, a disabled vehicle reported in the roadway. Still a work zone report on the outer loop at Persimmon Tree Road before the Clara Barton Parkway along the right lane, but that is not causing any delays. And on the inner loop of the Beltway, be aware of a new exit ramp to go onto westbound 66. The new right exit, which is a long flyover ramp, is located about a half mile before the old exit ramp. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
It's mild and muggy. Temperatures will be climbing into the mid-80s by lunchtime. 90 degrees, your forecast high. It may feel a little hotter this afternoon when you factor in the humidity. And with the heating of the day, a few isolated pop-up showers and storms not completely out of the question. However, most of you won't get any rain today. Overnight tonight, there could be some patchy fog developing, so keep that in mind for your Sunday morning. Otherwise, we'll break out into sun tomorrow afternoon, and a few more pop-up showers and storms are possible. I'm 7 News meteorologist Eileen Whalen in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 right now at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
This is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Boy, tough choice as to where we start here today, with the former president or the current president. I guess the big news on Friday, of course, the affidavit, redacted and released. As you look at all of this, John, and you've watched these controversies over the years, what strikes you about the release of the affidavit and where this whole Mar-a-Lago mess goes next?
Well, the Mar-a-Lago mess, Rick, is continuing. The mess is metastasizing. For one thing, the documents are heavily redacted. Several newscasters were holding up many of the 36 pages that were completely blacked out. President Trump, of course, fueled by all of this, called it a public relations subterfuge. In any event, it identified documents in 14 14 of the 15 boxes. Among them were 25 marked as top secret, 67 marked as confidential, and 92 marked secret. They had various categories and statements. But as far as the degree of the sensitivity there, except for reports of some clandestine documents from the CIA, we just don't know exactly why this effort to go in and exactly why they couldn't have worked it out with President Trump. Just simply the threat of such a raid should have brought documents like this back from the now storied 11 boxes. The Mar-a-Lago mess will not go away.
President Biden, speaking last night in Montgomery County, calling MAGA supporters semi-fascists. Where do you think that's going to go?
It never goes anywhere. Look, I've known Republicans over the years who, when they talk about Hitler or Nazism, they are roundly chastised by the media, and most of them end up apologizing and taking it back. Fascist is a term that is overused but increasingly thrown at opponents, as socialist was some years ago. And frankly, the name-calling never works. My guess is the president won't do it again.
Student loan debt forgiveness. How is that going to go over with a lot of the blue-collar Democrat base?
Much of the blue-collar Democratic base abandoned the Democratic Party under President Obama and went over when Donald Trump became the Republican nominee. It is likely that that exodus from the Democratic Party will continue and be fast-forwarded. The president forgave $10,000 for borrowers who make under $125,000 and another $2,000 for those who received Pell Grants. Overall, we're talking about $300 billion in forgiven loans over the next 10 years. And according to a study by Penn Wharton, the beneficiaries of this will come from the top 60% of income earners. All told, this comes at a time when unemployment among college graduates, always a touchy issue, is at a modern low of 2%. And they're talking about all of this forgiveness and all of this debt erased. Most of these taxpayers who will pay it are people who paid off their own student loans already or never went to college. That means blue-collar workers, or in some cases, middle-income earners. Needless to say, they're not going to be happy. This is the fairness doctrine of economics, and it will be translated into politics. We'll see in November.
Primaries in New York, we knew that one veteran Democrat would have to go, and who was it?
And that was Carolyn Maloney, who is a 30-year incumbent, formerly representing what was called the Silk Stocking District in Manhattan, and now thrown in with parts of Brooklyn. That meant she had to face another 30-year congressional veteran, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler. He outworked her a little bit, and he had other key endorsements, including the New York Times, and won fairly comfortably. No relation, but Sean Patrick Maloney represents the centrist wing of the Democratic Party. His first candidate that he worked for, and in fact his political mentor, is Bill Clinton, who campaigned hard for Maloney, now chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. He's running in a newly sculpted 17th district that includes parts of Westchester County, plus Dutchess and Putnam counties. Overall, it was enough for him to defeat the candidate of the progressives, State Senator Alessandra Biaggi. She was endorsed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Working Families Party, and Emily's List. Voters wanted a centrist Clinton-style Democrat, or at least primary voters did. He faces an unusually strong Republican challenger in State Assemblyman Mike Lawler come November.
Well, that's New York. Let's move south to Florida. Ron DeSantis now knows who he is running against.
Yes, he certainly does. He'll face a familiar face in the Sunshine State, former Florida Governor Charlie Crist. He was a Republican when he was governor. Now he's ending a stint in the House of Representatives as a Democrat. He is the anti-DeSantis. Look, one of the worst-kept secrets in politics is that Ron DeSantis is going to run for president regardless of what Donald Trump does, and many consider him Trump without the tweets. Well, Democrats sense this, and they are making the candidacy of Charlie Crist a cause célèbre. Gavin Newsom, Democratic governor of California, and someone who has been a frequent DeSantis antagonist, donated $100,000 to Crist. It's a foregone conclusion that Joe Biden will campaign for him. And in his remarks after being nominated, Mr. Crist praised the president in the most effusive words possible and said he'd welcome his assistant on the campaign trail. For now, polls give DeSantis a healthy lead. And just how big he wins, assuming he is reelected, may determine his chances in another election 2 years from now.
Also in Florida, Congressman Matt Gaetz surviving a lot of bad press down there and an investigation.
He certainly is. And, of course, these are things that have been building against Congressman Gaetz for a long time. You're talking about sexual misbehavior there. The congressman has denied all of this. By the way, he was recently married. But the investigation will go under. In the meantime, despite all of the invective that's out there, all of the bad press that he faces, Matt Gaetz won his primary fairly comfortably and is at least better than even money to be reelected. I would say that my colleagues in the media will have Matt Gaetz to kick around for a little while longer.
It's funny how there's a big news story one day and then it's gone the next, but a big news story earlier in the week, now forgotten, is Dr. Anthony Fauci stepping down, and he will continue in some capacity somewhere, but he ain't talking yet.
He will retire on his 81st birthday, Christmas Day. And, of course, Dr. Fauci initially caught the nation's imagination. He was America's doctor. And indeed, his briefings and his sparring with former President Trump built him up a big following. But it turned out, much as he had been on all sides during the AIDS epidemic of the 1990s, Dr. Fauci gave advice that was conflicting or evolved over a period of time. He was considered the father of masking orders and lockdown mandates. More recently, he has said that there's no need to use masks anymore, and in some cases, they didn't really help. Everything that Fauci seems to say seems to have an alternate view, but in the end, he will be seen as the poster child for the heavy hand of government in the COVID recovery. He'll have to wait for history to judge him. For now, many of his critics are celebrating, and one of the leading critics, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, simply said, "I hope that someone throws that little elf over the Potomac."
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, thank you as always, sir.
Always a pleasure, Rick, and it's never boring, especially on Friday afternoons.
7:17 now, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Coming up, we'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, KT McFarland. What happened on the stock market yesterday? Down 1,000 points? What's that mean for your portfolio? Well, that's coming up next. First off, though, we go to Michelle Murray. She's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Forestville, watch out for accident and activity on the inner loop at Pennsylvania Avenue. That's where the two white lanes are blocked. Use extra caution there. Also on the outer loop approaching the Clara Barton Parkway, there is still road work along the left side. That is not causing any problems. And there is a new exit ramp to westbound 66 from the inner loop, so do watch out for that new traffic pattern there. In Fairfax, some paving operations now taking place on 29 northbound just south of US 50, and that is taking up the center lane and the right lane. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, our Saturday morning starting off pretty nice. It's mild and muggy. Temperatures will be climbing into the mid-80s by lunchtime. 90 degrees, your forecast high. It may feel a little hotter this afternoon when you factor in the humidity. And with the heating of the day, a few isolated pop-up showers and storms not completely out of the question. However, most of you won't get any rain today. Overnight tonight, there could be some patchy fog developing, so keep that in mind for your Sunday morning. Otherwise, we'll break out into sun tomorrow afternoon, and a few more pop-up showers and storms are possible. I'm 7 News meteorologist Eileen Whalen in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It is 72 degrees in the nation's capital, 719 now on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Know the news the minute you wake up. O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. It's good to have you with us this morning. And you've seen the president recently talking about inflation coming down. You remember the lie he told where it was like zero inflation for the month of July, zero increase, but it was still pretty high inflation. And you've seen Jared Bernstein, one of the White House economic advisors, on the lawn talking about how inflation's coming down, and Brian Deese, another of the economic advisors, and, of course, Corinne Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary. Everybody's talking about how inflation's coming down. Well, apparently, Jerome Powell, who is the Federal Reserve chairman, he doesn't seem to be so confused, because he made an 8-minute speech yesterday, and he was making hawkish remarks about monetary policy. It was the annual Jackson Hole Symposium, and he was making these comments and talked about the possibility that we may need to see more rate hikes. He was reiterating that the U.S. Central Bank will keep raising interest rates and probably leave them elevated for a while to reduce inflation. So he doesn't seem to be convinced by the president or everybody else in the administration that stands out on the lawn and talks about how inflation is now coming down. The Fed chair scared the bejesus out of everybody. And what happened? Well, the Dow went down 1,000 points yesterday. Sorry to ruin your Saturday morning if you missed that at the end of the day. But a 1,000-point drop in the Dow. It's the worst since June on the NASDAQ. It was the worst since May for the Dow. Now, you probably took a hit in your 401k and in your portfolio in general. But just a quick note on how Elon Musk did yesterday. Elon Musk lost $5.5 billion when the market went down 1,000 points. How much do you think Elon Musk has lost since the first of the year? $16.6 billion. Jeff Bezos, every time you get an Amazon package ordered and you pay Amazon Prime for the year, this might make you feel a little better about that. Jeff Bezos lost $6.8 billion yesterday. He's lost $38 billion since the beginning of the year. $38 billion. Bill Gates lost $2.2 million yesterday, and he has now lost $19.7 billion since the first of the year. Warren Buffett lost $2.7 billion yesterday. He's lost $7.8 billion since the first of the year. But the economy is fine. You know, it's the strongest economy ever in the history of the world, according to the president. Think about all this when you see them running those victory laps around the White House lawn. It is 7:23 now. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. 7:25 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL, and the student loan debt forgiveness plan the president is now introducing. And we're not going to pay for it, obviously. Us taxpayers won't be paying for it. They've magically, in the administration, have paid for it through the deficit reduction, right? That's what they tell us. Well, Corinne Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, was kind of grilled on this on Thursday in the White House briefing room. And she was having a little trouble coming up with a cost, and this is how that went down.
Do you all believe that this student loan program is fully paid for? And if it's not, Why does the president think it was important to have all of his other spending priorities fully paid for to be fiscally responsible, but not this one?
So we do, this is the question that my colleague here, Ambassador, got. So we have to get a better sense, right, of what we're talking about as far as cost. Wait, let me just say that out loud. She is the domestic policy advisor, and when she was asked that question, so I just want to iterate what she said. But we do believe it will be fully paid for because of the work that this president has done with the economy. Because of what you just said, what I just said is what we have done to bring down the deficit reduction.
You believe in what she's saying there? Habada, 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 habada. Well, let's give her a second chance.
So you could say this is how much it's going to cost if everyone who is eligible applies.
We just don't have a number to share at this time.
Why don't you?
The UN ambassador, the former UN ambassador, spoke to this yesterday. We just have to see. It is a process that we just need to take a look before we can answer that question. We just don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
But I guess what I'm struggling with, and I think some of my colleagues have asked about, is
question yesterday. This is nothing new, right? This is a summary.
Oh,
okay, but you picked up on what he was saying.
But I was going to say, if you don't know how much it's going to cost, how can you guarantee that it's going to be paid for, even if you're defining paid for in a way that some of us have questions about?
So you asked the question yesterday. Well, why didn't you come up with an answer? You had 24 hours to come up with some kind of an answer. So how did that make you feel? You feel a little more confident? Well, one more. This one will make you feel confident.
You said a couple of times that this is a fiscally responsible way of doing this. But can you explain a little bit about how you guys think it is fiscally responsible? Because you can't say how much it's going to cost. You can't say exactly how it's going to be paid for, and you can't say exactly who is paying for the cost. I get how you're arguing that it helps certain populations, but how is it fiscally responsible?
I mean, the way that we are talking about it and what we're trying to say is the actions that we have taken, and you see this with the way that the deficit has been reduced, we have taken just the last 19 months. I see that look that you're giving me there.
Well, I hear that you've taken previous fiscally responsible actions that give you more wiggle room to be.
Right. It gives us no. We see this. We do not see this as irresponsible.
Okay. Well, I hope you feel better about that now. So watch for your taxes to go up. IRS agents come knocking on your door. It's 7:28. It is the Saturday morning update. We've got the 7:30 news coming up next with Maria Leaf. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Maria Leaf. Montgomery County's holding its annual back-to-school fair today in Wheaton, and it's about more than generating excitement for the new year.
The medical officer for Montgomery County Public Schools is urging parents and students to pick up free test kits for COVID at the event. Dr. Patricia Kapunin calls the free kits a critical component for keeping Montgomery County's community risk level low per CDC guidance. Students head back to class in Montgomery County on Monday. Prince George's County school kids also head back on Monday and must be masked. D.C. public schools are welcoming students back this Monday as well, but only if the 12 and older are vaccinated against COVID. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
SpaceX will launch more batches of satellites for its orbital internet service. Those launches taking place on opposite ends of the country.
SpaceX will launch two rockets over the coming days. Each will carry another set of satellites for its Starlink internet service, which can provide broadband access around the planet. The first rocket, scheduled for today, launches from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida. The second will launch Tuesday from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. Starlink is already active in a wide part of North America. Eben Brown, Fox News.
People in and around Mississippi's capital city are being told to prepare for flooding of the Pearl River. Storms dropped heavy rains in Mississippi and other parts of the Deep South. Some homes and businesses in the Jackson area are expected to flood. And experts say the Pearl River could crest on Tuesday at levels at almost as high as during a 2020 flood. WMAL traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic and weather. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
You'll still find accident activity on the inner loop of the Beltway at Pennsylvania Avenue, where the right side is blocked with a crash. Stay to your left and use extra caution making your way through. In Bethesda, on Wisconsin Avenue North, between Bradley Boulevard and 410, you will find construction in the right lane and the right shoulder. And in Silver Spring, the Sligo Creek Parkway is closed between Forest Glen Road and University Boulevard. And in Tacoma Park, between Old Carroll Avenue and Piney Branch Road for weekend recreation activity. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mild and muggy. Temperatures will be climbing into the mid-80s by lunchtime. 90 degrees, your forecast high. It may feel a little hotter this afternoon when you factor in the humidity. And with the heating of the day, a few isolated pop-up showers and storms, not completely out of the question. However, most of you won't get any rain today. Overnight tonight, there could be some patchy fog developing, so keep that in mind for your Sunday morning. Otherwise, we'll break out into sun tomorrow afternoon, and a few more pop-up showers and storms are possible. I'm 7 News meteorologist Eileen Whalen in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
74 right now at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
7:36 Saturday morning update, WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is with us every weekend. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Well, there's so many perspectives on what is happening with the former president, the raid at Mar-a-Lago, the classified documents, and I had the misfortune of actually seeing Joy Reid and John Brennan on the same screen yesterday. I wanted to give you the opportunity to kind of shed some of your knowledge and expertise, and what is standing out to you in all this mess?
Well, I think the most notable thing is the fact that the media, you know, one of the reports recently, which I've been looking at with a great deal of interest, and I follow John Solomon as John's reporting on the fact that the Trump search warrant, which is public now, people can go read this. This is not something that people have to go do deep research on. It's the fact that the government, the FBI admits that they used CBS News and Breitbart reports as part of their justification to go and do this very severe, very intrusive raid. And it's starting to look, especially when you pair that with the pages. I mean, the pages of redactions, it's mind-blowing. You know, and a lot of the audience follows me, understands, you know, I wrote the book Operation Dark Heart, heavily redacted, you know, something like 260, 270 redactions, almost all of which the government had to remove once we did our First Amendment lawsuit. I think we're going to come to find the same thing here. All of those redactions are meant to hide the fact that the government had nothing. And it's very apparent the same National Security Division of DOJ and FBI are now engaged in the Russia collusion narrative 2.0. And it's just very clear, and ultimately, you know, I deal with lawyers a lot. The Article II issue, President Trump was an Article II officer. So that means that he, when he was the president, had total dominion over information in the executive branch to include, I saw one of the articles out there talking about, oh, they found ORCON, which is original control, which I'm sure many of the audience understands, that only the original controller, whoever came up with the classified information, could declassify, which is completely false. The president is the ultimate classifier or declassifier. So by the time this gets to trial, if it ever does, the president's cloaked with immense power, to quote one of the folks in the media on this, and he will easily be able to beat this. So this is all simply, in my judgment, being drummed up to create the chaos and focus on Trump, to put essentially more pressure to have him not run, because I don't think the 6th January committee is going to come up with anything. So that's why you see all of this retooling and reuse of the tools, techniques, and procedures that the FBI and the DOJ used in the Russia collusion issue. So it's all deja vu all over again, to quote a famous baseball manager.
Well, it's funny to me to see how many different interpretations of what I think are probably pretty clear laws and statutes in terms of the definition of what the president's powers are to declassify. I would think there's like a law or a rule somewhere, and this should be maybe a little more cut and dry, as opposed to if you're a progressive, you'll look at it this way, and if you're conservative and a Trump supporter, you'll look at it that way. I mean, you know, there's got to be a fact in here somewhere.
Well, there is, and I think Tom Fenton has been, you know, again, shout out to Tom. Tom has litigated on trying to get presidential documents from the Clintons. And the courts have always said, no, the president is the ultimate authority to determine what the National Archives gets, what he gets to keep, and what he gets to consider classified or declassified. So there is clear legal precedence for this, Rick. It's just that Biden, and again, this is something that the White House has denied. We're going to come back. I'm just going on the record here. We're going to come back to find that they were fully involved and coordinated all this, and the FBI and Merrick Garland would never have moved forward without the White House complete and utter green lighting of this. So it's all about, I think, as many things we've seen, all the roads lead back to Joe Biden in the White House.
Change gears here. A very troubling headline in the New York Post. Wanted to get your read on this. Kabul airport bomber was known for days before the explosion that killed 13 Americans. That's the headline. And who do they attribute that to?
Well, this came out of New York Post, which I think is credible. And one Marine had said that there was information being circulated on the actual perimeter of the Kabul airport at the very gate where he was posted, where the attack happened. And so, you know, this is something that I've read through this. I've talked to others, and a lot of folks find this to be very credible. And let's remember this. I'm going to put this right up front. The interest and Central Command's interest is to say, it was a lone bomber. We had no way of stopping it. Yet the indications are, and other folks have said this, that there were warnings of suicide bombers. And this guy had to go through, this suicide bomber who ultimately made it in, had to go through several checkpoints. That is to say that there were barriers all around the airport for that guy to have gotten through. There seems to have been something that had to be done to allow him to get there. So this Marine Corps guy, this Marine who's now out, is saying that he and his folks were warned about it. And they're saying that the information came from CIA. So to me, this rings of my experience in the Afghanistan theater during my time there, where there was always a good understanding of the general threat in the local area. Normally there was a network of folks kind of who could generally say this is what's going on. And I think this warrants a relook at the whole thing, because the narrative which the Pentagon's put out is saying, it sounds like 9/11. We couldn't have prevented it, even though we identified all these guys. We couldn't have stopped them from conducting the 9/11 attacks. Same thing here. I think there's ample evidence that there's more to the story, way more to the story than what happened. So the Biden administration, clearly, I think, has wanted this to all go away. And this coming out at the one-year anniversary of the suicide attack at the Abbey Gate, which, you know, a number of Marine Corps, Navy corpsmen, and I think at least one Army person was killed in the attack, need to be examined. I think those families are owed an accurate and complete answer on what happened. And ultimately, Rick, as we know, to this day, no one has been held accountable. No one has paid the price of that failure, except for Lieutenant Colonel Stu Schiller, Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel, who was actually prosecuted by the military. I actually was a witness at his trial trying to defend him. No one has been fired or prosecuted except for him for saying this was preventable. Now, think about that. All the brass, the people who were involved, who failed serially, the one guy who says, hey, we could have done better and this is what we did wrong, he's the only one who's been fired. And that's not acceptable. And this is another indicator, this report regarding the fact that this guy, the suicide bomber, was known. needs to be examined seriously, and someone does need to get fired for the failure.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, 25 words or less. What's on the Thought to Action podcast this weekend?
So, great point. We're getting ready to launch something called Project Sentinel. It's a new effort to examine how we, the people, can go about organizing and supporting the Constitution. Imagine that, Rick. Just trying to get back to basics. Anyway, so you'll see more on this. The next Thought to Action coming out is going to be talking about our new project that will be focused on all of this. So Project Sentinel's coming, and I think everybody's going to like it when we get it up and running. So
sounds good. You'll find it at the LondonCenter.org website. That's LondonCenter.org. Tony, thank you so much as always.
Great. Thanks, Rick.
K.T. McFarland up next, but first we head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray is there at 7:46 on the Saturday morning update.
The Beltway in Forestville, still some accident activity on the Interloop at Pennsylvania Avenue, and that is currently blocking the right lane. Also, in the district, you will find a street closure in effect due to the DDOT's Open Streets event. 12th Street will be closed between Franklin Street and Monroe Street. And in Fairfax City, watch out for paving work on 29 northbound at Route 50. That affects the right and the center lanes. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, our Saturday morning starting off pretty nice. It's mild and muggy. Temperatures will be climbing into the mid-80s by lunchtime. 90 degrees, your forecast high. It may feel a little hotter this afternoon when you factor in the humidity. And with the heating of the day, a few isolated pop-up showers and storms not completely out of the question. However, most of you won't get any rain today. Overnight tonight, there could be some patchy fog developing, so keep that in mind for your Sunday morning. Otherwise, we'll break out into sun tomorrow afternoon, and a few more pop-up showers and storms are possible. I'm 7 News meteorologist Eileen Whalen in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
72 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. 7:49, Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are honored to be joined by K.T. McFarland each week. She was President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor. She is a board member of the American Conservative Union and author of the bestseller Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
We saw the FBI raid, obviously, at Mar-a-Lago, and you start to get thinking, and I still have these nightmares about Adam Schiff. And he's got the evidence. He's got all the evidence of the Russian collusion. And he keeps talking on these weekend shows about the evidence he has. And I haven't seen that yet. And then Mark Zuckerberg, in a podcast with Joe Rogan, made some revelations the other day. Put all of this in perspective for us, KT.
It's an out-of-control federal government. I mean, the Trump raid, so the redacted search warrant comes out. Well, it's useless. It's just a whole lot of black lines. And what was in it, what left in it, and I guess if you can be based on the leaks that are coming to the Washington Post and the New York Times, it says, oh, well, we're looking for highly classified documents. But that doesn't square. I mean, they're not looking for nuclear secrets. It's the way the search warrant is, and I think if you extrapolate from that, they were just looking for something, anything they could find. Look, if they're now getting pretty desperate, right, that we hate Trump, let's get Trump guys. They failed with the Russia probe, as you point out, Adam Schiff, and I was collateral damage in that. They failed with the two impeachment efforts. They failed with the January 6th hearings. I mean, some of the polls are showing that people think Trump, before the January 6th hearings, they thought he was guilty of stuff, but now after the hearings, less people think he's guilty of stuff. In other words, Trump's coming out better after these January 6th hearings. So I think it was an effort by the intelligence community, FBI, government establishment, to go see if there's something there. You know, a former attorney general said to me, well, it's like boiling the ocean in hopes that a couple of dead fish will float to the top. Mm. These guys were looking for the dead fish. I think there might even be a second motive. I'm just guessing on this. I have no evidence. But what if the FBI guys were assuming maybe with all these whistleblowers that have come forward to Congress about what's going on in the FBI, maybe what they were looking for was to see, did Trump have any whistleblower stuff? It's just a speculation, but it's not out of the range of possibility, given what's going on lately. So it's the FBI raid, and the in-your-face redacted search warrant. It's 87 armed FBI agents, only 4% of which are for customer services, you know, like when you call the hotline. The rest are for new agents. Conservatives assume the FBI is going to target the not-for-profits, conservative individuals, not because there's anything that they've done wrong, but because the FBI guys know that they can bankrupt people because you have to pay for your own legal fees. And then obviously the Zuckerberg thing, which I think should have been a bombshell, that 51 former career intelligence agency agents, officials, confirmed that it was Russian disinformation. The FBI goes to big tech and says, we want you to censor this because it's Russian disinformation. And they knew the whole time that it wasn't Russian disinformation. So talk about a federal government that's going to swing an election. I just think it speaks to the out-of-control federal government, which is getting constantly bigger, more lethal, more in-your-face, screw you, average American. You know, the federal government likes the Democrats now because the Democrats are the party of bigger, more centralized government. But they'd turn on a dime if they thought that they weren't going to get that from the Democrats. So I think it's not even Republican versus Democrat. I think it's the out-of-control federal bureaucracy, the Praetorian Guard that runs our country versus the rest of the people.
Well, that makes us all semi-fascists, doesn't it, for thinking and talking this way as the president.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure I'm on the hit list for the 87 armed FBI agents.
I wanted to ask you about the 40-year cycle that you talk about in your book, and that might be very relevant right now.
Okay, so when I went through the Russian, I remember I was deputy national security advisor. My boss, Mike Flynn, was fired for cavorting with the Russians. I was collateral damage in the Russia investigation, and it ruined my life. I mean, it certainly ruined my career. It didn't ruin my life, but it ruined my career. And it now turns out, of course, that it was all made up, and that the FBI and the Mueller guy, they knew it was all made up. It was made up by the Clinton campaign to try to get Donald Trump in 2016. But meanwhile, when I went through it all, there was a real moment of real personal crisis that I went through when it was pretty clear that the FBI guys wanted me to, say that I had lied when I hadn't lied, you know, commit a crime, say that I'd committed a crime when I hadn't committed a crime. And there was a point at which it became pretty, they were implying that, well, who else can you implicate? And maybe we'll let you off if you do that. And so I go to my husband and I say, oh, gosh, you know, maybe, you know, they're going to destroy us. Maybe I just plead guilty to crimes I didn't commit to get rid of these guys. And my husband, my wonderful husband, said, no, I know you well enough. You can't live with yourself if you lie. So even if they hound us to our graves, you've got to tell the truth. So I did, and I stood up and said, okay, you're not going to break me. I'm not going to lie. And then they went away, and they went on to somebody else. But what happened after that was that my husband and I looked at each other, and he said, you got to get your feet back under yourself. So that night, we took a plane to Glasgow. We rented a car. We drove to the west coast of Scotland, very remote. We got on a ferry boat and went another 8 hours to the most remote island in the Hebrides, where there were a lot more sheep than people and very few paved roads. And so I then got to thinking, well, you know, what's happened to me? What's happened to my country? Is this all over? Is this what America has become? Witch hunts? You know, made up stuff, crazy stuff? And then I thought, you know, everybody says this is the worst we've ever been in. Oh, my gosh, America's close to civil war. And so I started then thinking about American history, and I'd spent a lot of time studying American history over my life. And I realized we go through this sort of this replacement of the ruling class every 40 years, starting with the American Revolution. And what was the American Revolution all about? It was get rid of the ruling class, which isn't representing our interests, the king, the king's representatives. And then the new ruling class came in. The new ruling class was the Virginia landowners and the Boston merchants. And they were running things pretty well. But by 40 years later, they'd gotten out of touch with the American people of the day. So then there was another political revolution, the Jacksonian Revolution. And then there was another political revolution after the Civil War. And then the Industrial Revolution. And then the Great Depression, World War II. And then Reagan, and then now. And my theory is that every 40 years, the government, the elite, the ruling class becomes so out of touch with an ever-changing America. You know, we are a dynamic, we're constantly, not just because of immigration, but people move around the country. We have new methods of earning our living. We have demographic changes, ethnic changes for sure, racial changes, social changes. And a government, by its very nature, just wants to cling to power. And they constantly are clinging to power, and they kind of lose sight of this new dynamic, changing America. And so as a result, every 40 years, we take our constitutionally given right and we have a political revolution. And that's what's happening now. It's in the midterms, you know, in a couple of months, the Republicans will take at least the House, maybe the Senate, maybe not. But then the House of Representatives will have subpoena power. And there are a lot of really capable people in the House of Representatives, Republicans, who are going to take charge of the committees. And what they'll do is they'll start defund budget cuts, for sure. And then they'll do have the subpoena power, and they'll start holding these government agencies, these out-of-control, screw-you government agencies of faceless bureaucrats who can't be fired, who report to nobody but themselves, who are self-perpetuating. And I think this will be the 40-year cycle. The 40-year cycle doesn't happen overnight. You don't have the change overnight. It takes 5-8 years, and it's messy, and it's nasty, and there's a lot of collateral damage, people like me. But in the end, who wins? The American people. So I have enormous confidence in the common sense of the common American.
Going to have to get out and vote. K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. You'll find out a lot more about the 40-year cycle in the book. K.T., as always, thank you so much for being with us.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. It is 7:59. That is it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news with Maria Leaf.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.